Vincenzo Nibali è pronto, Vincenzo Nibali è pronto, 1 minuto 54 secondi, allora Arena, prepariamoci perché tra poco partirà Nibali, 2, 1, parte Vincenzo Nibali! Eccolo, fatevi sentire, Richard Carapaz, il leader della classifica generale, è pronto a prendere il via, 17 km da percorrere. Per quanto riguarda questa ultima tappa, concentratissimo. Allora amici dell'Ecuador, 3, 2, 1, parte Richard Carapaz!
Nice, what's your name?
Angelica.
Where are you from?
I'm from Ecuador, but I'm living in Barcelona.
You live in Barcelona?
Yes, I'm here.
So have you come here to support?
Yes, I come here just because I wanted to see Carapaz, because today is a nice day. It's the biggest day for Ecuador, for Carapaz, so I'm really proud about, because I'm Ecuadorian.
So I can see you're excited.
Yes.
Are you a cycling fan?
Yes. Yes, I really like this. It's really amazing, enjoying, and this is a really party.
So how important is this in Ecuador? How many people in Ecuador are following this?
Well, you can see there are a lot of people here. Well, I think in Ecuador it's more important than football game, but this is something new for my country, and I think this is a new opportunity to people to recognize that there is another kind of sport than football, so cycling is a good option.
And all the people here who are clearly from Ecuador, do they live in Italy, do you think, or you know, they come from all over Europe?
Yes, they live here because some years ago a lot of people from Ecuador came here because of the economic situation there, so there are a lot of Ecuadorians here.
So you're going to have a big celebration tonight, I think.
Yes, it's a big celebration because it's the first time that someone from Ecuador is doing history here. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Vincenzo Nibali, il momento di farvi sentire da questo corridore che ha vinto due giri d'Italia, un Tour de France, una Vuelta in Spagna, due Lombardia, una Sanremo, ha vinto grandi classiche, sta per portare a termine la propria prova.
The arrival of Vincenzo Nibali as he makes his way around the final turns. The time of Chad Haga has gone past already. Haga has got his head in his hands right now. Vincenzo Nibali about to arrive into the conclusion of this time trial.
Allora eccoci con Nibali, ultime pedalate, 22.30, nono tempo, 22.30, il tempo finale per il portacolori della Barra e Merida, Verona è qua in fondo, sta per fare il suo ingresso su questa passerella rosa, fatevi sentire, applaudite, Vincenzo!
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in Verona.
Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigureci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Daniel?
We're in Verona.
City of love.
Yes, we've got some Hellas Verona fans behind us. Hellas Verona being one of the two major football clubs of Verona, the other one being, Richard, Chievo.
Ah. Well, we were played in there with some noise, some atmosphere from the arena this afternoon, where I sat all afternoon, actually, baking in the heat.
Like Julian Assange, surrounded by Ecuadorians.
Oh, goodness me.
Well, I can see the similarities.
No.
I can see him marooned in there.
Oh, my goodness. No. Julian Assange wasn't mentioned, but there were hundreds, if not thousands, of Ecuadorians in the arena. I sat with them, and it was a tremendous atmosphere, and it was actually very emotional. There were people around me shaking, crying. You know, the build-up to Carapaz, Richard Carapaz, leaving the start house and starting his time trial was really charged. And then when he finished, an amazing atmosphere. And I think, you know, for the first time in what's been quite a kind of lukewarm Giro, it hasn't really caught fire. I felt a real sense of what it meant for Carapaz to become the first Ecuadorian to win a Grand Tour, and just what his kind of standing and status will now be in Ecuador.
Well, Rich, it's a country which has a population of 17 million people, but as far as sport is concerned, it doesn't have the same glorious history as some other South American nations. The high point was probably Andrés Gómez's victory in the French Open in the singles title. He won the singles title in 1990. They got to the quarterfinal of the Football World Cup and they lost to England, didn't they? Was that the last World Cup or the previous one? But that was seen as a pretty high watermark in terms of Ecuadorian sporting history.
And we heard earlier in our Giro coverage that there isn't, although there are a few Ecuadorian cyclists now, three in this Giro, there isn't really a scene in Ecuador. Riders have to go to Colombia to kind of develop. And one thing I've been told is that there's this huge rivalry between Ecuador and Colombia. And yet, it was very notable today that the Colombian riders, Miguel Angel Lopez in particular, when he appeared in the arena, he got a huge cheer from the Ecuadorians. So that was interesting. Worth praising the Giro organisers for a tremendous kind of showpiece finish to the race here.
Yeah, not the first time the race is finished in the arena in Verona. The last time was in 2010, and it works as a spectacle. Today, there was not an awful lot to play for. Carapaz had the overall classification pretty much sewn up. Most of the podium places were pretty much sewn up, apart from Mikel Landa, who was in third overnight, but was he in third? Yes. Was in third. But it was almost a formality that he was going to lose that to Primoz Roglic. That is what happened. So it could have been an anticlimax, but for those who were here, it didn't feel like one at all, did it?
Well, in this episode, our final episode from the Giro, although we will have a press conference episode later in the week, we are going to hear from a lot of riders with their sort of best and worst moments from the Giro. Some really... I mean, listen out for Larry Warbass is all I can say. It's a fantastic story from Larry Warbass from this Giro. The stage, though, today was won by Chad Haga, the American rider on Team Sunweb. Now, if you'd listened to our Kilometre Zero on Friday, which was called No Cigars, focused on the teams that hadn't won a stage at the Giro, and his sports director, Mark Reef, did say that Haga was really targeting this time trial and that he was very optimistic. He did say that he thought top five was, you know, the target. So I think his performance today exceeded expectations. Poor old Victor Campenaerts, he was in the hot seat when Haga came in, and he was 4 seconds slower, having lost the previous time trial to Primoz Roglic very, very narrowly, and after a terrible bike change. He's not the world hour record holder, has not come away from this year with a stage on it, she'll be disappointed about. His loss to Sudal teammate Thomas De Gendt with a very strong ride into third, so second and third for Lotto Soudal. Damiano Caruso was fourth. It was interesting how the GC guys got on. An outstanding time trial from Vincenzo Nibali, which has continued a trend at this Giro. He's time trialed very, very well, and he actually beat Primoz Roglic in the time trial, the winner of the previous two time trials. Pretty incredible performance. And, you know, in the end, the final analysis, Richard Carapaz wins the Giro by 1 minute five from Vincenzo Nibali. And Nibali has cause to rue that day that Ilner Zakarin won, when he and Primoz Roglic basically marked each other as Richard Carapaz sailed up the road. And that was, as we discussed last night, that was the day that Carapaz won the Giro. As you said, Landa slipped down a place to lose his spot on the podium and probably a healthy bonus. As we were talking about yesterday, weren't we?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking to a team manager yesterday, who should probably remain nameless for reasons of diplomacy, about bonuses in riders' contracts. It's standard practice for a rider to have a bonus for a podium place. And, you know, it can cause some difficulties internally. Obviously, when a rider is... destined to, has already decided to move teams the following year as well. We think that's the case with Landa. We think he's going to Bahrain Merida. We think it's the case with Carapaz as well. But but Landa played the perfect teammate here at least, didn't he, Rich?
He did, yeah, and he ends up fourth, which he'll not be very happy with. Primož Roglič, on the other hand, I think will be happy with third, especially when you look at this time trial and see it as evidence that his form was declining. He was on the wane. So to hold on for third, I think in the circumstances, is a good result for him. His first time on a Grand Tour podium. So Mika Landa, fourth. Balkan Mollema, fifth. Very, very strong ride from him. Rafał Majka moved up a place to sixth. Miguel Ángel López,
Superman,
moved down a place to seventh. Simon Yates finished eighth. Some mischievous suggestions that the Ala Zubeldia rider of this Grand Tour has been Simon Yates.
Well, I think fair, really.
Pavel Sivakov, ninth. Very good performance from the 21-year-old. Ilnur Zakarin, 10th. Hugh Carthy, 11th. Joe Dombrowski, 12th.
Are you going to do the whole GC?
I'm going to go do the whole GC, but I'm going to stop there, actually. But some really notable performance. I mean, Eddie Dunbar, 22nd, also a decent performance. And Lucas Hamilton, 25th. Young riders who riding their first Grand Tour and worth mention. The King of the Mountains was, of course, Giulio Ciccone of Trek Segafredo. Points jersey, Pascal Ackermann. Youth jersey, under 25 jersey, Miguel Ángel López. And the top team, Daniel, the one that everybody wants.
Well, I know who won the Fair Play Award. That was Bahrain Merida, wasn't it?
Yeah, but who was the top team
on
GC?
How do you
GC?
Win the Fair Play Award? We should know this, but I don't know it. Is it the team that gets the fewest yellow cards?
Every day there's a Fair Play classification, and usually there are sort of 17 teams equal. And then a few teams have been docked a few points for some misdemeanor or other. But I must admit, maybe this is a kilometer zero next year. But team classification was won by Movistar.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Ram.
There's a lovely picture on my stairs of Tom Simpson in the Peugeot jersey, and I got told a story, which I'm not sure is true, that during that time when that photograph was taken, it was when colour TV started, and apparently the jersey that stood out the most on colour TV was the black and white jersey of Peugeot, which just seems absolutely ridiculous, doesn't it, in the fact that colour TV, everybody thought, oh wow, we can do fantastic jerseys that will stand out more, but actually the simplicity of black and white stood out better.
Just on club kit, I think there is something about belonging by wearing the same jersey, but there's also something about not looking too matchy-matchy. You know, I think quite a few of us have joined clubs and started all wear the same stuff, but you get a bit bored of all looking like your identikit. And so increasingly we're seeing people adding little elements in, or in our club we've got a variety of different jerseys you can wear. So when you see a group of 50 people, they don't look like an army, they look like a group of people, but they all sort of make sense together. And that's I think we can do this with the Paul Smith product we've just done, because there's different colours and there's ways of putting it together, so it'll help our club to have a different way of dressing as part of the whole.
Thank you very much to Rafa for being our headline sponsor, and that was the final instalment in the conversation between Sir Paul Smith, the designer, and Simon Mottram, the founder of Rafa, discussing cycling kit in general, but in particular the RCC, Rafa Cycling Club kit that Paul Smith has designed, which is absolutely beautiful. You can have a look at it at rafa.cc. Interesting points made there by Paul Smith. Mentions a photograph that he's got of Tom Simpson. I've been to his office actually in London, and it's just an emporium of cycling memorabilia. He's got loads of bikes, jerseys, just everywhere you look there's something cycling related. So he is a passionate cyclist. So this Giro, Daniel, where does it rank? We're going to hear the best and worst moments from the riders, or some of the riders, not all of them. But for you, how do you reflect on this Giro?
Well, I'm not going to give my wine glass rating until tomorrow, Rich. Always the day after the Giro. But I mean, we've got a very interesting winner in the sense that you know, usually a surprise winner is greeted with great excitement and fanfare. In this case, it's sort of a semi-surprise, isn't it? It's a surprise that most people are kicking themselves for not having cottoned on to earlier or not having tipped before the Giro, because the signs were there in the sense that last year he finished fourth overall and won a stage, had an excellent start to the season, won the Vuelta a Asturias, performed well in other races like Tirreno. He kept a pretty low profile, but hasn't had any significant illnesses or injuries, and yet we were all pretty much convinced he was coming to this Giro as a support rider for Mikel Landa, and we got it quite spectacularly wrong, didn't we?
The first time I was really aware of him was 2017 in the Vuelta. There was a stage in the first week that went through Benidorm and finished off a steep little climb, and I think Chris Froome won the stage, but Richard Carapaz attacked on the climb. I was signing with Fran Reyes, who knew Richard Carapaz pretty well because he rode for Fran's team when he first came over to Europe, and he was surprised to see him off the front of the group at that. You know, this was only sort of 18 months ago, so you know, his progress has been rapid. But as you say, that Giro last year in particular, you know, highlighted, I think, because it was so late on and because it was so overshadowed by Chris Froome's race winning ride on stage 19, Carapaz sneaking up into the top four kind of went unremarked upon. And you're right that was the result and the performance that really should have alerted us to his potential, as it seems to have alerted what was then Team Sky and Dave Brailsford, who acted apparently quite soon after that to sign him up.
Yeah, and I think in the last year, his confidence has just grown and escalated. He said in interviews that it was a real breakthrough for him to come fourth in the Giro last year. That was the first time he'd really considered that he might one day contend for a Grand Tour. Then he went, before this Giro, he went home to Ecuador, was training at 3,000 metres above sea level. You know, this is something that we're all aware of now, the amount of altitude training that goes on. But throughout this year, I've been speaking to some coaches and team managers, and they've remarked upon what an important role it's now playing, and the fact that the richer teams tend to be able to afford longer training, well, longer altitude camps, and they're doing that, well, with their Grand Tour leaders, and large swathes of the season are now consumed with altitude training camps. And you know, Carapaz, born at 3,000 meters above sea level, I'm sure that's sort of seeped into his genes on some level. But yeah, his preparation was excellent. And this morning, Rich, I spoke to Eusebio Unzué, the manager of Movistar, just to gauge to what extent it was a surprise for him that Carapaz has been so strong in this Giro.
It's true, it's a big surprise. Although by winning a stage and finishing fourth overall last year, he already left everyone his business card. That said, he's made huge strides in a year. He's become very confident in himself, and he's asked us to reciprocate that because he felt stronger and stronger. We also noticed it earlier in the year. Then he got to the Giro, and he was close to being the strongest guy here from the first time trial in Bologna, all the way through the mountains. He could also count on Mikel, who's a master in this kind of situation, having been there several times before. That plus a brilliant performance from the whole team have made this possible. I don't think anyone should have been underestimating him after the first stage he won on the fifth day. The others knew him a bit already, and I think he already showed enough on the first mountain stage for the others to consider him a candidate for the overall victory. After that, he simply gave them an encore at Courmayeur, and then it became just a case of consolidating and taking any opportunity if it came his way, with the final time trial and Roglic's superiority there in mind. That's pretty much how it panned out. He took a few seconds in Como, a few more in Ponte di Legno, and you saw what happened yesterday. I can't really gauge yet what impact all of this will have in Ecuador. Honestly though, I'm very happy to have done this with a rider from a new cycling country. We did something similar for Colombia with Nairo Quintana 6 years ago, and I know what something like this means for countries like that. I mean, having an ambassador who can achieve this sort of thing. It's really exciting that we've played our part in giving Ecuador a star like Richard, not least because he came from our development system. So yes, it's a fantastic feeling overall.
Well, Movie Star obviously have big business interests in South America, don't they? And they are spreading their net beyond Colombia, Ecuador, Costa Rica. The continent is obviously a great hunting ground for talent, and Venezuela as well. And no doubt there'll be other Ecuadorian cyclists who emerge because of Richard Carapaz. And I must say, sitting with the Ecuadorian fans today, it did bring it home to me just what how this would be received back there. And we've read about the Ecuadorian television showing the last two stages live, buying the rights to show the stage live. It's clearly resonated in Ecuador to a great degree, and Carapaz is set to probably get the sort of reception that we see for some of the Colombian riders when they go home.
Yeah, the bitter note for Movistar, we think, is that they're going to lose Carapaz next year. We've heard various things the last few days that Movistar didn't move quickly enough to up
that he wasn't on very much money.
Yeah, they didn't move quickly enough to raise his salary after a very good first year as a pro, second year as well. And consequently, I think his agent, Giuseppe Acquadro, il pasticcere, as he's known, we've done that story, I think, before. That particular agent has a fairly bumpy relationship with Movistar. He's had some of his big clients there, like Nairo Quintana, but there have been a few disputes along the way. And it seems that on this occasion with Carapaz, Acquadro has... well, decided that Carapaz would be better off at another team, and a team with which Acquadro has a very good relationship, Ineos.
Worth noting that it was Movistar's 15th Grand Tour win in the course of their existence. From, I think this is their 39th season in the peloton. They began as Reynolds back in 1980, I think it was, and morphed into Banesto, Caiss d'Epargne, Movistar. They've been various incarnations over the years, but you know, Unzué has been there throughout, hasn't he? And he has masterminded 15 Grand Tour wins, which if you break it down isn't maybe as many as it should be, but nevertheless, it's not easy to win a Grand Tour, and an awful lot of teams with an awful lot less or fewer. So another team leaving this Giro with much to reflect on, I think, is Jumbo Visma, who came in with a rider who a lot of people fancy as a favourite, Primoz Roglic. And he won the way that he won the opening time trial, the opening prologue in Bologna, suggested that he was on fire and it would be a case of whether he was able to maintain that form. Had some bad luck along the way. I mean, Robert Hesink he lost before the race even started, and then Laurens de Ploes in the first week to illness. So he's been left isolated, not had the support that he would have liked. I spoke to Richard Ploeg at the start of the time trial day. This was before Roglic managed to secure his place on the podium. Richard Ploeg is the general manager of Jumbo Visma and has been really instrumental in the project to build a team that can win a Grand Tour.
You've come out for the end of the Giro. What's your assessment of the race? I know you came here with ambitions of Primoz challenging to win the race, but what's your assessment?
Well, we still have one race to go, stage to go. But I think we did a really good job taking into account all the circumstances what happened. I mean, we lost already for the Giro Robert Gesink, which is a really incredible strong guy, but also experienced. And of course, we brought in Sepp Kuss, who's talented and really strong, but does not have the same experience as Robert Gesink. And then we lost Laurens de Ploes, which was the lieutenant for the end of the stages, so that hurted us and Primoz a lot during these days.
Do you think that has been a factor? I don't want to say it's this point because he's got a good chance of finishing on the podium today, but I guess he's been in such great form all season. There have been two things that people talked about: has his form dipped a little bit, and has he also suffered from not having as much support in the mountains as some of the other riders in this race?
I think yes, the latter, and also he crashed in the Sunday, So he had some pain and some restraints from that as well. And so the last week was not, he was not at his best anymore because of that, we think. And of course, like you said, and what I said already, we missed especially Lawrence in the end.
Is there an argument? You're obviously spreading your resources between the Giro and the Tour de France. You've got a strong team going to the Tour de France as well. Is there an argument for putting all your very strongest riders in one team for one Grand Tour?
No, that could be an idea for the next races. But again, when we made a plan for this year, we had on paper a very strong team here with Geesink and Lawrence and the other guys, Antoine. But then things are changing because of a crash in Liège-Bastogne-Liège. You cannot say suddenly at that moment that we put in one of the other riders with other goals, because they are also not prepared to do what they have to do here. It was so we had to choose for Sepp, and not that Sepp again. I don't want to diminish his capacities, because he's a great rider and a great talent, but he lacks the experience.
And if Primoz is to finish on the podium here, which is very possible, would you regard that as another positive step forward in your sort of development as a team?
Yes, well, even if it is as it is today, we made a big step in our... We went through two stages here, which is incredible. Riding top five in a Grand Tour is not something we did often as a team, and we saw also the experience with having the top favorite of the Giro in our ranks is also really important for the near future. So I see it as a positive step on the learning curve. And yes, the result we would have liked it to be a little bit better on the higher on the podium, but I think, To be honest, I think we can be really happy at the moment.
So I think in the circumstances, Daniel, Jumbo-Visma will be quite happy. It's their first podium in a Grand Tour. And I think, given what happened to Roglic along the way, and it's interesting you mentioned the crash, as Roglic himself mentioned the crash on the road to Como as being quite significant in the downturn in his form that we've seen. I think third place is a result that they can be quite proud of.
Yeah, I think so. The question with Roglic, I suppose, is how much margin there is for improvement. He's 29, but he's very young in cycling terms. This is what his third full
fourth
season?
Grand fourth, Tour,
fourth Grand Tour, but third full season with his current team. And I was speaking to his manager Mattia Galli earlier on the Giro, and he talks about the fact that Roglic has had this great momentum so far in his career, in the sense that everything he's done has been new and everything he's done has been better than the previous year, or the like-for-like comparisons have always been positive, and that obviously creates a snowball effect. And this is maybe the first time in his career where you could call what he's done here as plateauing, having finished the Tour de France in fourth place last year. So now, it's very easy to go from there to a point where people start to get frustrated, disappointed, ask questions. And the next Grand Tour for Roglic is going to be an important one. If he finishes fourth or fifth, then people will start to ask questions. I think that there is still margin for improvement. I think the timing of his form peak is the big one. I think he was in form too quickly in this Giro. That's possibly inexperience, possibly not knowing himself fully yet, and more than any real weakness he has in time trials or in the mountains, because I think he's a very well-rounded rider, isn't he?
Well, Daniel, we've been over the last couple of days asking some of the riders for their best moments.
Riders, journalists, team managers.
Anyone we could find to speak to us about their best moments and worst moments from this Giro.
I felt like I was actually going better in the second week. I'm Joe Dombrowski from Team EF Education First. I crashed right before the rest day. I don't know, I feel like I haven't really been quite as good since then. Not bad, but I was expecting a bit more out of the third week. But overall, it's not bad. It was a decent Giro for the team. My last couple seasons weren't great, so it's good that I feel like I'm back on track. you know, back at the level I know I can be at, which is good.
Eddie Dunbar, Team Ineos. Obviously third in the stage 12. I felt like I should have won that stage. I was a bit disappointed after, maybe a bit too hard on myself, but yeah, it was just, I gambled in the finish, maybe a small bit too much, but you live and learn, as I said, after the race, and I'll be back for sure to try again.
And a hardest moment?
The day after, when I went in the break again. That was the first time in the race where I thought, right, my legs aren't so good today. Couldn't really follow the top guys, so didn't want to go too deep into the ride. So I backed off a bit, thought about the other days, and I got stronger from there on, which was always positive. But yeah, if I had to pick, it was stage 13. I always wanted to do Grand Tour. I thought it was a race that would suit me. I think I've learned that it is a race that suits me, and I can get stronger as I go on. I have a lot to improve on, obviously, but yeah, the more I do of them, the better I'll get, I think, and I'm looking forward to the next few years.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. And as we near the end of another Grand Tour, or reach the end of another Grand Tour, we say big thank you to Science Sport for supporting us and enabling us to cover all the Grand Tours in the way that we do. Next stop, Tour de France. But thank you to Science and Sport. Daniel, best racing moment for you?
More than a moment, I would say a theme, Rich. I think this Giro has been short on storylines. I think it's been short on controversy. There was a lot of fuss yesterday about Superman's altercation with a fan. I think that reflects the fact that it's been pretty sparse as far as controversy and talking points have been concerned on this Giro. One storyline which I have enjoyed as a sort of racing narrative has been Primoz Roglic's isolation. And, in the face of some very strong teams, and even Bahrain Merida have perhaps not brought their strongest team to the Giro, but Nibali's been surrounded by, he's had Pozzovivo, he's had Caruso, who have been very useful, and Jumbo-Visma have coped or have tried manfully, the likes of Koen Bouwman, Sepp Kuss and Antoine Tolhoek, but they've really been thrown in at the deep end, and at times it has been almost as though Primoz Roglic is sort of floating down the river on a single sort of branch that, you know, has fallen off what was previously a fairly rickety raft. And he's been very stoic in that particular situation. He has a stoic kind of demeanor about him. His whole sort of countenance is quite stoic and sort of stereotypically Eastern European, inscrutable. And I thought that's very interesting because, we talk a lot about how important the collective is in cycling. Sometimes it's all quite nebulous. We don't really fully understand when the team is important, at what phases of the race, how much it's important. In this instance, we've seen one man sort of taking grenades from all sides, really, and he's done pretty well, but it hasn't been enough in the end. So I think that's been one of the more intriguing aspects of this Giro.
Indeed. A couple of racing highlights for me was, well, Cesare Benedetti's stage win was a highlight, and we could see in the reaction of a lot of his fellow riders that they were happy for him, which is always very telling. He's obviously very popular in the peloton. He does a lot of work for other people, and this was one of those days where it just all came together for him, and he's a very sort of unassuming, modest, humble guy. I think he won a lot of people over with his victory speech, his very modest kind of way that he accepted the fact that he'd won. He seemed almost embarrassed by it in a way. So that was a highlight. Another highlight was today, Chad Haga winning the time trial. He had a terrible accident a few years ago.
January 2016.
Calpe, yeah. And I was there when it happened because I was out to interview John Dinkob and Tom Dumoulin. And I was in their hotel when word came back about this accident that some of the riders had been involved in. A car had hit them head on, the car had been on the wrong side of the road. And, you know, it's one of those things where initially the reports are, oh, there's been an accident, there's been a crash. And then just gradually the news, the atmosphere darkens and the news becomes worse and worse until you start to feel fear the worst. And it was a really awful thing to witness and to be around when it was going on and when there was uncertainty about how these guys were. And, you know, that's a crash that's left a really terrible legacy on the team and on certain individuals in the team. We saw John Degenkolb win a stage at the Tour de France last year, which was his first major win since that happened, having previously won Milan San Remo and Paris-Roubaix. You know, his progress was really stopped with that crash, and he's been fighting to come back ever since. And Chad Haga was another one involved. And well, I spoke to him just a few weeks after the crash as he sort of came back to racing at Flèche Wallonne.
I think about it every day, many times a day. Every risk I take, every chance I take in the race is a decision I have to make. Because I have to, I'm battling fear and being scared constantly. But as more races go well, the more confident I get, closer to my normal self.
So that was Chad Haga. I mean, always been a strong time trialist and a winner today, a surprise winner. But, you know, they've salvaged something in the end, Sunweb, from a really disappointing race where Tom Dumoulin, the team was all about supporting Tom Dumoulin to try and win his second Giro. But, you know, the flip side is, I think they'll go to the Tour de France with a very strong team. Sam Omen hopefully will recover, and Wilco Kelderman.
And, Rich, sort of ironically, you might think that, you might have thought that Chad Haga's his responsibilities helping Tom Dumoulin might have hindered him in terms of going for a stage win. I think that actually helped him in the sense that he had trained a lot, I think, to help Dumoulin in the mountains. He'd been doing a lot of work on his climbing, and consequently he's been quite comfortable in the mountains over relative to the likes of Victor Campenaerts. He's been fairly comfortable in the mountains over the last few days. He's been able to conserve some energy, and that was absolutely key today.
Shall we hear some more best and worst from other riders?
Let's.
Jan Polans, who I team him. I think the moment when I first time step on the podium to wear the pink jersey, I mean, this was of course really like a dream come true. And yeah, I think for every rider when he get the jersey, I mean, it's something special, you know, especially in the Giro. I mean, it's one of the biggest races, and yeah, I will never forget that moment. And I hope in the future there will be some similar moments for me. Yesterday on the Passo Mangen, I didn't, at some point, I didn't know if I could go over the top, you know. I was thinking, oh, I will need to stop, eh? But then I was just trying to push, and after it was a little bit more, I survived the bad moment and then tried to not lose as much to still keep top 20.
My name is Larry Warbass, I ride for AG2R Le Mondial. And my best of the Giro was probably the fish that I had last night. You know, we did like this super long day, and our chef was like, oh yeah, for dinner we're gonna have like cod. And I was like, seriously, cod? Like fish? Like, I do not feel like fish again the last night. So I was like, not really looking forward to it. And then honestly, it was probably the best piece of fish I've ever eaten in my life. So he cooked it in like, I don't know, he used some kind of French vapor cooking with like a plastic wrap around it. And then it was like a coconut milk, vanilla sauce sort of thing that he cooked it in. It was incredible. So that was probably my best of the Giro. Unfortunately, the legs didn't really provide me with too much good memories. What was the worst? I'll be honest. My Giro in general was pretty average, so the highs and the lows were pretty much all the same. Okay, low. Oh, there was one day where my tire nearly rolled off on a descent, and it was like the second climb of the day. It was the second stage Carapaz one, and Yeah, it was like I was like in good position on this descent, then I started to see my tire got really hot on the descent and started to roll off, so I had to pull out of the group. And then the cars were so far back because you know, everyone behind on the climb and in the descent, and I just ended up on the road by myself, really far behind, and then ended up in the gruppetto for a really long day. And then someone tried to interview me about being in the gruppetto at the end of that day, and I was really not happy about being there. So that was probably my low of the Giro.
Gianni Savio.
So very, very happy for the winner in Fausto Masnada in San Giovanni Rotondo. This was unbelievable for us, team professional, win at the beginning of the Giro. And the bad moment was the accident for Andrea Vendrame in the finish, because I think that he was able to play the victory with Esteban Chaves.
Larry Warbas, second low. Okay. of the Giro.
Yeah, okay, so you just reminded me, I don't know if I've ever snapped. I very, very rarely snapped. Well, I rarely snap ever, but I very rarely snapped in a bike race. And, you know, the whole thing, like when you're in a Grand Tour, there's always these guys who you're next to. You know, like, you just always ride in the same place in the peloton, okay? So, you know, you end up, there's always like, each guy has like one or two guys. And so you're always like kind of bumping bars. And for me, it actually used to be Frank Schleck. And you know, he thought he was, like, you know, kind of hot shit. So he'd always just try to take my wheel and, whatever. So I used to let him. But, you know, now I'm a little bit feistier. And so for me, this Giro, a lot of times it was Hugh Carthy. And it's okay. We had a talk. So you know, I'm allowed to say this in public now. But, like, it was sometime at the start of the third week, the Motorola day, I think. And it was, like, pretty early on in the day. And and he's pretty lanky, so he takes up a lot of space in the bunch, and it moves left to right a little bit. And so one day I was behind him, and I know if I do something wrong, you know, sometimes I do something wrong and I'll totally admit it, but this time I did really nothing, and I was behind him, and he moved over, and I didn't do anything, I didn't say anything. And then he turned around and he goes, like, something like, where are you trying to go, what's your problem? And I had just had enough from, like, I don't know, the whole stress of the race and the weeks. And I just went off. And I just tore into him for 30. It was like, I didn't even know what I was saying. But for 30 seconds straight, I just went off on him, just yelling and yelling and yelling and yelling. And I think he was so shocked to see that I was, like, cracked, that he didn't really say anything in response. And part of what I was saying was that, you know, you need to have respect. Whatever. And then he just said, I don't have respect because no one respects me. But then later in the day, I went up to him and I said, I'm sorry for cracking. And we kind of like made up. So it was okay. We're good now. But that was maybe my low of the Giro.
Probably fueled his attack that day.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, then he actually flew. And then I actually kind of felt bad because then you saw, like, the end when he sprinted with Nibali and then Nibali gave him shit. I was like, oh, man, maybe he doesn't really get that much respect, actually. But, you know, so, sorry.
And Daniel, do you have a best non-racing moment?
Yes,
there must be so
sorry,
many
you're
to choose
not,
from.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think you feature in it, unfortunately, Rich. I think it was the evening that I spent with Napalm in Barbaresco.
Oh, typical. I knew it.
Yeah, unfortunately, the best two. I mean, we visited some fantastic locations. We always do on the Giro. The best two, the two that I most enjoyed, have actually not really been on the race route. They've been sort of on transfer, long transfers between stage finishes and starts. So one was in Barbaresco. We decided to stay there after the stage to Novi Ligure, and the start the next day was in Cuneo. About the halfway point was the sort of Lange Hills, that the area around Alba in Piedmont, and we had a fantastic meal in Barbaresco, drank some gorgeous wine, and yeah, that was difficult to improve upon. Another one, Rich, was Bassano del Grappa last night.
Oh, that was going to be mine, Bassano del Grappa, well, last night, yeah. That was a real...
revelation.
I'd spotted that we were seeing in the B&B Hemingway, and I thought, that's interesting. And then, you know, as I looked at it, I saw this history between Ernest Hemingway and Bassano del Grappa from the First World War, when he was based there, and he was actually based in the building that we stayed in, and it's a long building alongside the river, a beautiful river. What's the river called again?
Brenta. Sorry?
The Brenta. And at one end of this block is the Hemingway Museum, and at the other end was our Ben Breakfast, and the Ben Breakfast was just given over to Hemingway. I went to the museum this morning, and it, you know, Hemingway's connection with the place is quite tenuous in a way, and the museum was as much about the First World War and the Italian campaign and the Americans who were based there, and it was very interesting, but also it was about Hemingway and his whole life, actually, and, you know, reminded again of what a restless figure Hemingway was, and just the travel that he did, the situations he found himself in, his involvement in, well, First World War, the Spanish Civil War, the Second World War. He always wanted to be where the action was, and it was really, really interesting, really enjoyable cultural morning.
And you mentioned the river, Rich, and the bridge that goes over the river is quite remarkable. In most people's minds, the most famous and the most remarkable bridge in Italy is the Ponte Vecchio in Florence, or maybe the Rialto in Venice, but the Ponte degli Alpini in Bassano del Grappa is the hipster choice for the best bridge in Italy, because it was designed by Andrea Palladio. Palladio has lots of extraordinary villas that were built in the sort of Renaissance period, so 16th century in the Veneto region. Most of them are open to the public, you can visit them. And now there are a couple of lovely little grappa bars actually in the bridge, aren't there?
Whereas
the Ponte Vecchio, unfortunately, is filled with tat shops.
Yeah. I mean, I was so inspired by my visit to Bassano del Grappa that I bought A Farewell to Arms, Hemingway's book that's really a fictionalized account of his time there and a love affair and his involvement in the First World War. I was inspired to reprise one of the cycling podcast's greatest ever moments, Daniel, because the opening paragraph in that book describes the very scene that we could see from our B&B.
True.
And so this morning I went and found Larry Warbass, who is from the same part of the world as Hemingway.
So there is a link. Gratuitous navel gazing.
He's from the Midwest like Hemingway was, and you know, he kind of speaks in that kind of Hemingway drawl. So I went and found Larry Warbass,
Larry,
a.k.a. the Ernest Hemingway of the Peloton, and I asked him to read the opening paragraph of A Farewell to Arms.
Sorry, Daniel, Richard made me do this. In the late summer of that year, we lived in a house in a village that looked across the river and the plain to the mountains. In the bed of the river, there were pebbles and boulders, dry and white in the sun, and the water was clear and swiftly moving and blue in the channels. Troops went by the house and down the road, and the dust they raised powdered the leaves of the trees. The trunks of the trees, too, were dusty, and the leaves fell early that year, and we saw the troops marching along the road, and the dust rising, and leaves, stirred by the breeze, falling, and the soldiers marching, and afterward the road bare and white except for the leaves.
So that was Larry Warbass reading Ernest Hemingway. Daniel, how did you get on asking Hugh Carthy to read a bit of Shakespeare?
We'll get on to that in a minute. Do you know, from I got a couple of souvenirs from Bassano del Grappa. I got grappa-flavoured toothpaste, manufactured by Nardini, who invented the distillery, which invented grappa. But Hugh Carthy, Shakespeare, not a marriage made in the city.
What about Simon Yates?
In the city of love. No, Simon Yates
the
was...
The two gentlemen of Verona. Sorry, have you seen somebody?
No, I've seen my girlfriend.
Wow, City of Love. This
yeah,
is wonderful.
Yeah, very apt.
What a gooseberry I feel
yeah,
now.
Anyway, she's walking by, she's looking very uncomfortable. we were talking about Hugh Carthy. I actually spoke to him after the finish today, and it was another classic to be added
another
to the
highlight of the Giro,
growing, the growing Hugh Carthy anthology of great interviews.
Hugh, what were the emotions when you came into the arena there?
Yeah, it was nice. I was a bit confused. No one told me where to go. I didn't know whether I was going down or left or right. So, yeah. Better direction next time.
Has it been the best 3 weeks of your career to date?
I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint. Different parts of your career mean different things. Most important, I don't know. Nicest, I don't know. It's hard to say. Your perspective changes with time, isn't it? And as you get more experience and things, so. Yeah, things seem less important in the past, don't they? Yeah, I'm happy, and I'm not going to get complacent. Still a lot of work to do, and keep doing the same things, tweak things, improve things.
A lot of the riders have said, looking at their power files, that this has not just been, well, any ordinary Grand Tour, it's been a very hard one as well. Does that give you extra satisfaction that you've been able to do what you have in a very hard race?
Yeah, I suppose. I can't remember the question. It's been hard. It's been hard. Power files, I don't know. Every race is hard these days. So there's no easy races. Even the ones at the start of the season, the end of the season. From Australia to China, everything's the same nowadays, more or less. My performance has been good and my head's been good and I can't ask for any more.
What's the plan tonight? Anything special planned? Going to Juliet's balcony, the statue, anything like that?
No.
I'm Esteban Chavez and my team is Mitchelton Scott. Yeah, yesterday was a pretty special one, but also start this race is a dream for me after what happened last year. And being the start line is awesome. And that is like yesterday, pay back the hard work and all the expectations and all the bad moments. And like I said yesterday, it's important to keep believing, keep fighting, keep attacking, because you never know when the bigger soul will back.
I'm Scott Davis and I ride for Team Dimension Data. Best moment, probably the TT. It was so unexpected. I'd had real rough first 7 days with a stomach problem, and yeah, I was really worried that I was going to have to pull out, to be honest. And then in the end, we just said, I'll use it as recovery, so I didn't actually even go full gas. Which, you know, with hindsight, I'm kicking myself now, because maybe if I had, you know, you never know. Yeah, so that was nice, but then, yeah, like I said, there's been plenty of rough days as well. That first week for me was the toughest, because, we had long days and I just couldn't really eat properly or drink properly, so, but all character building.
My name's Joe Henley and I ride for Team Sunweb. Actually, I quite enjoyed the Mortirolo stage. Yeah, I'd done that climb once before and I knew it was pretty mythical, so yeah, it was pretty cool rolling into the bottom of that climb in the breakaway.
And worst moment?
Then hitting the Mortirolo.
Leo McCourt, working for Pro Cycling Magazine and the daily newspaper De Telegraaf. My very best thing of this Giro was the Agriturismo Casa di Mamma near Alba, which was really a terrific souvenir. Good food, I guess pasta, and a little more of pasta, and finally tiramisu. Beautiful surrounding, nice place to ride your bike. The worst thing of this Giro d'Italia was the weather. Always raining. I think there were 3 days of sunshine, and I did the last couple of Giros as well, and the other two I did were full of sun every day, and now it was raining. And I really hate it, because it looks like we were in Holland, where it's always raining.
Hi, I am Enzo Vicennati. I'm a journalist in Bici Sport magazine of Italy. I'm here at my 29th Giro d'Italia. The thing I didn't like the most in this Giro was the first week. I never saw a first week like this. It does remember me the old Tour de France. I didn't see stages good for the show, for the ranking. I didn't see a mountain finish in the first 10 days. The thing I like the most is the wish of the big riders to fight every day without big tacticism. And I think they enjoyed the race, and this is good for the people. I think the last 10 days helped people to forget the first 10.
Well, some more best of, worst of there, Daniel. What's been the biggest disappointment for you in the race?
Well, there have been a few riders who have underperformed. I think Simon Yates has underperformed. He knows that. I think he's slightly mystified as to why it's happened. Although, Rich, you mentioned earlier, or at the top of the show, Taylor Tapper mentioned the time gaps. Carapaz's final winning margin was about a minute. We were talking in the car earlier about how much has changed in the last 15 years. 2006, the winning margin, Ivan Basso's winning margin, all the caveats that, you know, we need to apply to that because Basso was subsequently exposed as a dope cheat. But he won by, I think, over 9 minutes. Going back a little bit further to Tours de France, Jan Ulrich won by 9 minutes in the Tour de France in 1997. And, we've got a winner, Richard Carapaz, who feels as though he's won fairly emphatically without any real moments of great alarm, certainly since about, stage 10 or 11. Simon Yates has actually lost not that much time. I think his final deficit from Carapaz is about 8 or 9 minutes. I think that just speaks to the fact that we know who all of the most able, the most gifted guys in the peloton are now. However, those riders still cannot afford to be sort of 1 or 2% the wrong side of their best form. Otherwise, they will come in with a result like Simon Yates's, which is, a respectable result, but it's not what he was looking for.
No, 7:49 down in the end. Lopez been a bit disappointed. I mean, a lot of disappointments in this Giro also happened before the race even started. I think there's been sort of months of anticipation for this race. We were looking at this race as being potentially, if not probably, the most exciting of the Grand Tours, because we had Bernal against Dumoulin, against Nibali, against Roglic, against Lopez, nobody mentioning Carapaz, but we lost Bernal before the race started, thanks to a broken collarbone, and we then lost Dumoulin in the first few days, and so, it's been a bit of an anticlimax, and I think it almost goes back to day one, which I felt was an anticlimax. The climb up San Luca in Bologna, where the race started, a tremendous sort of arena for a prologue time trial.
Could have been the greatest opening stage time trial.
We walked up that climb and thought, this is going to be unbelievable. But then you've got Dumoulin off first, and really all the favourites in the first 20 riders, which, Daniel, I hadn't realised on rereading your Eddy Merckx book for a future project, in the 1969 Tour de France, which Merckx won, he did the same. His team also tried to be smart and beat the weather, beat the expected rain, and Merckx went off first in that prologue time trial in 1969. I wasn't sure if it happened before, but the whole point of the day on the climb is the anticipation, the build-up, and this was this kind of initial burst of excitement that just then was a sort of gradual deflating of the inflatable mattress of excitement.
No, I would agree with that, Rich. The course...
Good metaphor for the race in a way.
Yeah, the course itself has... it's not given us the most thrilling racing. We talked a few nights ago about the reasons for that. I think Maraveni was put in an impossible position by Matera's withdrawal, having been penciled in as the venue for the Grande Partenza. And he had to come up with an alternative route for not just the Grande Partenza, but the whole Giro in very short order. And he did that. One person in particular who works for RCS said that Venier has accomplished nothing short of a miracle to even put the Giro together, particularly now with the kind of restrictions that RCS are under for security reasons and because of terrorist threats or legislation that's been brought in to counteract terrorist threats. It's getting harder and harder for RCS to design the route, and particularly when something like that happens with Matera pulling out. So that's been slightly disappointing, not been the most thrilling route, and it's not been the most thrilling Giro.
It hasn't, but of course, the Giro, a highlight is always, well, two Italian legends. Gianni Savio has been giving us daily tactical insights into his team Androni. You went today to present him with an honorary Pedler de Charme t-shirt. He was delighted, I think. Has a press release dropped yet?
I'm so delighted that he disappeared for 2 or 3 minutes. He went off to find his team's press officer, and he demanded that a press release be written up. And hopefully that'll be winging its way around the superhighway.
Do you think many of our colleagues will be publishing that?
I don't know.
That press release?
I hope so.
Just a friend of mine, Jonathan Farmer, who is an expert on all things South America, has just messaged me to say that President Moreno has recorded a video message for Richard Carapaz. It's a phenomenal story in Ecuador, this apparently. So no doubt, as I say, we'll see lots more reaction. But we should hear what Gianni Savio had to say on being given his t-shirt. Then we'll hear from another Italian legend.
Big moment. I am very, very happy. And thank you very much for this t-shirt, Pédaleur de Charme. Alors, c'est en français. It's in French. Pédaleur de Charme. De Charme is gentleman. Thank you very much.
Dear listeners, I'm not with Richard, I'm not with Daniel, but I'm outside the doping control. Almost 2 hours after the finish of the stage, because I'm waiting for the shark. Vincenzo Nibali is doing the last anti-doping control of this Giro d'Italia, something as the number 22 stage, dear listeners. So it's not easy for me, but this message is certainly a massive message of love for you, and I hope that Richard and Daniel can give you this message. I hope so. And mainly, dear listeners, the Tour of Italy is over, but now my holidays are coming. Now the most important question for the end of this Giro is, dear listeners, for my holidays of June, Italian beaches or a Greek island? What do you think?
We don't have much more to add to our coverage from the Giro, do we?
Say that.
We're going to wrap things. Are we not wrapping things up? Is that not what we agreed?
Yes.
Anything else to add? Have you got anything more to
suggest? No, it's been a wonderful
we
journey.
We didn't talk about our worst off-race moments.
Full of ups and downs.
Was it the Italian Tommy Robinson?
Yeah, I think so.
Less said about that, the better. We had Lionel with us for that, of course. I guess we all look forward with great anticipation to your wine glass rating tomorrow. That's the only intrigue left in this year's Giro, isn't it? Before we go, Daniel, we're going to hear the last little medley of riders' best and worst moments from the Giro. Thanks to everybody who's tuned in and listened. Thanks to everybody who's bought one of Stacey Snyder's mugs. Thanks to everybody who's signed up as a friend of the podcast. Producers, get onto that. If you'd like to sign up as a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com, do so there. It's £15 for a year's worth of special episodes, exclusive content. You can also buy that as a friend for somebody, which quite a lot of people seem to like to do. It's a nice gift idea. Drop us an email, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com, if you'd like to buy a subscription to The Cycling Podcast as a gift for somebody. It's a perfect present for the cycling fan who has everything, isn't it, Daniel?
Yes.
Thanks to our producers, Tom Wally, Jonathan Rowe, Adam Bowie, Will Jones, John Mooney. Couldn't do it without them. They do a fantastic job, especially when, as we've had on a couple of occasions at this Giro, we've had a couple of technical problems with the cables, but they do a great job, especially when we have little problems like that.
And thanks most of all to the listeners.
Thanks to the listeners. Thank you very much indeed for listening and for all your feedback and comments throughout the Giro. Thanks to Maratera as well for the music. And thank you to you, Daniel, because you've been here for the whole 3 weeks.
Stoic,
like Primoz Roglic.
Thank you, Rich.
Brent Copeland, Bahrain Merida, General Manager. Bologna was great for me. I mean, we We had our partners from McLaren there, and it was the first Grand Tour for them to witness and to see the crowds that came out to see Vincenzo riding. So I really enjoyed Bologna. That was great. Coming up to the mountains for me is always lovely. I love being in the mountains. It's a beautiful area, and especially this part of the Dolomites is fantastic. Difficult days, I'd have to say. Unfortunately, the day we had to send Christian Koren home with the unfortunate news that he was involved in the Underlast case. So that was really sad for us to lose one rider in that way.
Simon Yates, Mitchelton Scott. It started very well in the prologue, and it's been going downhill since, unfortunately. Well, actually, saying that, it's probably both TTs. Obviously, I started really great with where I wanted to be. And then the other TT that we've done, just a bit of a disaster.
Hi, I'm Josef Czerny from CCC. I think this old Giro, this Grand Tour is for me unbelievable because we have 3 weeks of the racing, we have good atmosphere, we have flat stages, we have mountain stages, so I really enjoy it. One of these stages where I suffer a lot, so I think it was 4 days ago, so this was the worst moment in my Giro. Yeah, I had the empty legs and I suffered from the start to the finish. Yeah, I made it. A half hour after the first one, but I made it.
Luca Guercilena, Trek Segafredo. Well, I have to say that for how much I know the Dolomites, I'm always amazed about that. And especially the call off yesterday with the tunnels and so on. I heard that about that climb, but I was never in. And
Samboldo.
Yeah, Samboldo. And I have to say that's pretty crazy climb to see and to do. For Trek Segafredo, the best moment was obviously the stage of Mortirolo, because it was coming after 2-3 times in which we tried to win the stage, and that day we finally were able to make it with Ciccone. It was a stressful day, but we make it. And the worst was, I think, the crash of Moschetti, because he's a young guy, he was proving that to be able to be in the real game for the sprints, and then due to a bad crash he has to abandon, and that was for us a bit pity, because we know how much we invest in him and how much he can develop, and obviously now he was out, so it was the worst moment there.